This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
And welcome to the People Speak Radio at thepeoplespeakradio.net. This is your host, David Swanson, and we are very privileged for the next hour to have as our special guest a former federal prosecutor, award-winning prosecutor, and best-selling author of a wonderful book that is a prosecution, that is a case for indictment, U.S. versus Bush, United States versus George W. Bush, Et Alia, by Elizabeth de la Vega. Betsy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you here. I haven't gone through your whole resume, which is quite extensive, but people can read about you at thepeoplespeakradio.net and can go there and go into the chat room and send in questions for Elizabeth de la Vega during the next hour. You can also call in and be part of this conversation toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. Anywhere else in the world, it's also free, 877-489-6350, 877-489-6350. So, Betsy, indictment and prosecution and impeachment have been in the news in a number of ways recently, many of them drawing on the ideas you put down in this book quite some time ago. Can you tell those who are unfortunate enough not to know yet what the United States versus George W. Bush is all about?
Sure. What it is, it's actually almost in the form of a play or a trial transcript. After I retired from being a prosecutor for 20 years, I decided to approach the case of the pre-war intelligence fraud in just the same way that I would any prosecution for fraud. So I did an extensive review of the evidence as to what the president and his aides said publicly versus what they said behind the scenes. And I put all that together in the form of this trial transcript in front of a grand jury. And so the reader is really in the position of a grand juror. And although it's obvious from the fact that I wrote the book in the first place, what my point of view is, I don't really argue the case in the book so much as present the evidence and explain the law regarding conspiracy to defraud the United States so that the juror or the reader can make his or her decision at the end of the, after reading the book.
And it seems to me at least that there are quite a few possible criminal indictments for Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and gang. Do you think this was the only one or the most important one or the one you were most interested in?
The reason I chose this one, and I'll explain what it is, first of all, conspiracy to defraud the United States is a crime that's set forth in the criminal code, and it was charged against people in the Iran-Contra scandal and also people in Watergate. And what it prohibits is getting together in any way to use fraud or any form of deceit in order to get a branch or agency of government to take some action or not take some action. So the way I laid it out in the book actually is very similar to the way Congressman Kucinich's most recent article of impeachment is laid out, specifically directed towards deceit that affected Congress. And the reason I chose that crime is that it's sort of an umbrella crime, and it really broadly takes into account the whole scheme, which is actually ongoing, of course, deceiving Congress and the public with regard to the grounds for the war and the, even the execution of the war and covering up the earlier defeat and on and on. So I chose it because it's an overall crime. But, yes, there could be many. I could write many sequels if I were so moved. There's certainly crimes having to do with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The Bush administration, the people in the administration really admitted it. The president has admitted it. There's crimes relating to torture. I've written about this quite a bit myself already. There are not every single one of the allegations of misconduct in Dennis Kucinich's 35 articles of impeachment is precisely the same as a statutory crime. But in total, there are about 35 crimes that are alleged there as well.
Yeah.
So I just had to focus on one in order to have a book that people could actually pick up and carry around.
Otherwise, and I highly recommend that everyone do. It's not a short book. It's not a long book. It's a nice size explanation of how we were defrauded into a war. I assume it's safe to assume that Attorney General Mukasey has not called you up with gratitude and launched the indictment.
You know, it's shocking, isn't it? But you're right, he has not. In fact, no one from the Department of Justice has called me up to ask me to start working on the indictment. Although I must say, actually, that I have been contacted by a number of former and current prosecutors who are very happy to see that someone has laid this out. And it's safe to say that there are many people in the Justice Department who are extremely distressed about what's been happening there.
What did you make of Mukasey's recent comments, if you saw them, to the effect, to sort of simplify, that we should declare an eternal state of war everywhere so that laws that don't apply in wartime don't apply ever anywhere? My understanding.
Right. Well, I'm sure you feel this way, too. It's on the one hand, hard to be shocked by the conduct of the people in this administration, but at least for me, I continue to be shocked because you think that somebody with the background of Mukasey, who has been a federal judge, would have some respect for the law and would want the rule of law to prevail in this country, but clearly he doesn't. And I really was very leery about his appointment in the first place and disappointed that Charles Schumer and Dianne Feinstein supported him because he may be more well-spoken than Alberto Gonzalez, but he comes from the same mold. And this concept that we can have a permanent state of war as a way to deprive people of our civil liberties is, I hope, something that the Democrats will finally resist.
I certainly hope so. This is what is so aggravating, that we have a movement to get rid of Gonzalez when we finally catch on to how bad he is, and there's an article of impeachment getting lots of co-sponsors, and he resigns and leaves. And they put in somebody who's quite openly a Xerox copy, who's going to take orders from the same boss, from the same mafia capo who's giving Gonzalez the orders. And now they're talking about holding him in contempt, and what can they do about him when Bush and Cheney are still untouched?
Exactly. It's really a bait and switch that's been going on for a long time, and Congress has completely, the Democrats in particular, have completely bought into this idea that we can focus on individuals who are carrying out the work of Bush and Cheney, and by somehow moving to get rid of them, that will make it all better. And unfortunately, many people in the progressive movement kind of buy into that sham, really. It happened with Rumsfeld. It happened with Ashcroft. It happened with even Michael Brown, the FEMA person. It's not as if we can focus on these individuals without looking at Bush and Cheney and think that anything is going to be different if those individuals are gone.
Has anyone from the Barack Obama for President campaign contacted you or expressed any interest?
No, and I highly doubt that they would. It's my understanding that, and I'm just getting this from the news, so it could be wrong, but my understanding is that Cass Sunstein, who's a professor, is a legal advisor to Barack Obama. He has made statements indicating that they have no desire to go after people in the Bush administration, that that would be seen as vindictive or somehow unseemly, and that's a very disappointing thing to me. Not particularly surprising, but very disappointing, and it indicates to me a complete misunderstanding of the role of the Justice Department, because the role of the Justice Department is to enforce the law, and it doesn't matter who the person is who's violating it. It can be the lowliest person or the highest person in the government. The rules have to be the same. And it's really almost a juvenile approach, I hate to say, but it is, to look at it as somehow being vindictive.
Yeah, the same Obama advisor, Sunstein, also said that he opposes impeachment because it would be so awful to impeach two presidents in a row. Now, I don't know what you think, but that suggests to me that as long as we've just impeached a president, then the next president gets to be a king. Am I missing something?
Right, right. Well, it's a very arbitrary way of looking at things. When I was a prosecutor, every once in a while there would be a judge who would, for some bizarre reason, just rule in favor of one objection and then deny the next one in sort of an arbitrary way, as if that somehow made it fair. But it's actually just foolish. We have to look at each situation on its own merits. And the truth of the matter is, of course, that the impeachment proceedings against President Clinton were completely ill-advised and an abuse of the impeachment process. And so it is a very sad and tragic irony that the fact that the impeachment process was abused for one president is now somehow the grounds for refusing to go forward when that proceeding is necessary for the next president. It's not logical. It's not intelligent.
It's the rule of men, not the rule of law, which we were supposed to have.
Right, exactly.
We are starting to get questions in our chat room for Elizabeth De La Vega, former federal prosecutor and author of The United States versus George W. Bush et al. And I encourage you to go and send in your questions through the chat room at thepeoplespeakradio.org or .net. And if you want to get in on a phone call, call toll-free 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. That's in the U.S. or Canada. Internationally, outside of the U.S. and Canada, 877-489-6350. Betsy, John in Canada writes in with a question. In light of the capture of Radovan Karadzic, it is said that he will defend himself at The Hague. Do you believe that George W. Bush et al. Will meet a similar fate? If yes, in what time frame? If not, why not?
Well, that's a very hard thing to predict. Certainly there are grounds for charging the president with war crimes under a variety of theories, including bringing of the Iraq War in the first place, an unjustified war against a country that had done nothing against us, and also then you have the issues of the torture and the illegal rendition and so forth. I don't really feel like that I'm in a position to predict whether that would actually happen. And then the other issue is a very pragmatic one, which is we have a president who barely had any interest in leaving the country before he was president. I think he never did, I might be wrong on that. So he would have to travel outside the country in order to get arrested, so I don't think he's going to do that. But it would be certainly justified for him to be charged. And one of the considerations, of course, as to whether people do get charged under those circumstances is whether something's being done in their own country of origin. And considering that it looks very unlikely that anything is going to be done, that factor would weigh in favor of an international tribunal doing something.
I certainly hope so. There are rumors that Bush has purchased large pieces of land in Paraguay and did so when it was under a longstanding right-wing government that has now become something of a leftist government. I don't know what that does to his plans if they really exist. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know anything about that, but I just, on a gut level, find it hard to imagine George and Laura Bush going down to Paraguay to live.
Yeah, in fact, they're shopping for houses in Dallas and abandoning their Crawford so-called ranch, which was sort of a Karl Rove stage set for cowboyism.
Except that he never actually rode a horse.
Right. Just a follow-up question about the International Criminal Court recently proposed to arrest the president of the Sudan, who is an acting serving president, and which is a state that's not a member of the ICC any more than the United States is. But apparently the United Nations Security Council authorized the court to go after Sudan over the genocide and war crimes in Darfur.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very unlikely that would ever happen with the United States, since the United States has veto power on the Security Council. Is that your understanding of what the difficulty is in getting the International Criminal Court to act?
Yeah, it is. And just on a broader level, of course, the President of Sudan is not a powerful figure just in the general sense as opposed to officials from the United States. So, I mean, we are such a powerful country, maybe not as powerful as we think we are, but nevertheless, I think you hit the nail on the head that would make it rather unlikely that action would go forward, despite the fact that it's clearly warranted.
Well,
which is why we need to do something here and now.
Perhaps, I agree with that, but perhaps we will see a prosecution by an individual foreign country, like we were seeing with Pinochet. Maybe we can hope for that. Here's another question from Jack in Ohio. Ms. De La Vega, do you suppose that had Richard Nixon gone to jail for even a short time, it would have deterred future abuses of power, such as those of George W. Bush?
Well, I don't really know. I think that what actually did happen, of course, is that the attempt to rein in power with regard to Nixon is kind of what led to the monster that we have now, which is not to say that we shouldn't have done what we did then. But I actually don't think it would have made any difference, because what I've experienced with people who engage in misconduct like this, and this is something on a scale that I've never seen, of course, but even remotely close, is that people do it because they have hubris, they're arrogant, they don't think that anybody will hold them accountable, they think they are above the law. So even if they had seen somebody else go to jail for a very short period of time, I don't think that they would have thought it would have anything to do with them. And it's so far away in time, the memory would have faded. So I actually think the answer would be no, it wouldn't have mattered.
Did I understand you right to say that the attempt to rein in Nixon resulted in the abuses we have now?
Well, I think that, and not that they resulted in them, but that, as I understand the mind of Cheney, if anybody can understand it, is that his reaction to the constriction of executive power that came after, in response to Nixon, is kind of what informed his thinking about this unitary executive and the fact that there needs to be this expansive executive power. That is my understanding, but I have, believe it or not, never really spoken to Cheney about this.
I'm inclined to believe it. here's the question that I imagine the answer is simply sure in your dreams, but Albert from the United Kingdom asks, could the USA arrest Bush and turn him over to The Hague?
Well, the answer really is in your dreams. I just don't see that happening under any scenario, considering how difficult it is to have even a hearing that even mentions any wrongdoing by the president. So I guess the answer is no.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason that, given that the United States is not a member of the International Criminal Court, is the fear that any lowly American might ever be prosecuted by anybody outside the United States for anything. So,
right.
I'm inclined to doubt it.
We're also hearing now different people floating these ideas, kind of setting the scene for a blanket pardon. So, we know from so many of the different memos that were written, particularly with regard to torture, that people in the Bush administration have been well aware of the possibility of getting charged with crimes, and I would be amazed if the president doesn't issue some kind of blanket preemptive pardon when he leaves. And
go ahead.
Well, I mean, one could ask him that somebody pardon himself, and technically I would say no, except that the result of it would be that people would think there's a block, in addition to all the other political roadblock to doing it. So I don't think anything is going to happen along those lines.
This question of whether you can pardon yourself doesn't seem to have an answer everybody can agree on. You have people like John Dean claiming that Nixon could have pardoned himself and just chose not to. You have others saying that, of course, you cannot pardon yourself. It's absurd.
Mm-hmm.
It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. And I think there's some basis for that, in that, you know, the founders expected impeachment to be the remedy.
Uh-huh.
If the president pardoned anybody for anything he was remotely involved in, much less pardoning himself, it's just that not every outlandish abuse was explicitly prohibited in the Constitution.
No, that's exactly right, and that's something that we keep hearing over and over again in different conversations. The idea that every crazy form of misconduct that someone could do needs to be spelled out or else it's not illegal is absurd. And if you don't mind, I would like to ask you about what you wrote today about what is going to happen in this so-called impeachment hearing. I think it would be interesting for people to hear about that, the fact that they can't even mention any misconduct by the president.
Well, people should know, and we are speaking with Elizabeth De La Vega, a former federal prosecutor and the author of a wonderful book that you should have and buy for every friend and uncle and cousin, called The U.S. versus Bush, United States versus George W. Bush, which is a presentation to a grand jury of the case that they took us into a war on the basis of fraud, which is a crime. And Betsy, you've been heavily involved with pushing for impeachment as well as future prosecution, as have I. And as you mentioned, there is going to be a kind of sort of impeachment hearing this Friday, July 25th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, in the Rayburn House Office Building, in the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Congressman John Conyers. There's endless information on what's involved and what you can do to help promote it at my website, afterdowningstreet.org. afterdowningstreet.org. And in fact, if you go there and you click on the graphic of George W. Bush over on the side, you will find links to Congressman Kucinich's many articles of impeachment and some analyses and charts by you, Betsy, including indication of what criminal statutes are being violated in the abuses in each of the articles of impeachment. So after DowningStreet.org. But it's really a bizarre story of how we finally got to a kind of a sort of a crack in the door for impeachment. Because as you know, we've been bombarding Congress and the media with this demand for years. Dennis Kucinich took impeachment to the floor of the House and forced the matter on the floor of the House three times. The third time he did it, a few weeks ago, Nancy Pelosi went to John Conyers and said, look, hold a hearing where Kucinich comes and presents his case for impeachment. It won't really be an impeachment hearing, just an ordinary hearing, but let him present the case for impeachment. Not because Pelosi or Conyers is going to let impeachment happen if they can do anything about it, but because of the pressure, and perhaps, and I'm just speculating, because of the anger and resentment over the war and over the FISA bill, and the desire to do something or other that people actually want them to do. And so it evolved from there into this expanded hearing of who knows how many hours with a long list of witnesses, most of them assigned to push so-called remedies other than impeachment. So we will have promotion of impeachment, we will have promotion of censure, which is no deterrent to anybody and doesn't appear in the Constitution, which the hearing is supposedly about, the Constitution. We'll have people promoting passing legislation next year to redundantly recriminalize some of the crimes that have occurred and so forth, some really insane nonsense. And we'll have people pushing the idea of prosecution, including Vincent Bugliosi, a former prosecutor who has a theory on prosecuting Bush for murder at the state or local level, which could get around the problem of the McCain or Obama Justice Department refusing to follow your lead, Betsy. So we then have, today I've been dealing with what I'm hearing from a number of the witnesses who are expected to testify on Friday, including, there's a long list of witnesses who are, some of them outstanding. Elizabeth Holtzman, former congresswoman who was on the committee when they sought to impeach Nixon, is going to testify. Rocky Anderson, former mayor of Salt Lake City, is going to testify. But Rocky has assured them that he will push other remedies. You know, he may say something in support of impeachment, but he will also, and primarily, I think, support so-called other remedies. And there's an article in the Salt Lake paper today or yesterday about his upcoming testimony that doesn't mention the word impeachment anywhere. So this is the scenario. And then there are these rules of Congress that these witnesses are trying to figure out how in the heck they can deal with that forbid saying negative things about the president, suggesting that the president was in any way dishonest or disreputable. And in addition, at least in an ordinary hearing, I strongly suspect some of this goes away in an impeachment hearing because otherwise you couldn't have an impeachment hearing. But suggesting crime by any particular individual, much less the president, violating these rules can result in a Republican or any member of the committee standing up and saying, that must be stricken from the record. The witness then has to retract it, or it has to be stricken from the record, which somehow, the way Congress operates, takes an hour or so to erase those eight words from the record, and then that witness or Congress member is forbidden to say another word for the rest of the hearing. And so it's going to be very tricky, and there is this possibility that the thing gets shut down over some technicality.
David, are witnesses being specifically told that they have to follow these rules that prohibit them from referring to, for example, the president having been, one example you mentioned is, well, actually referring to the president lying?
Yes, they are. They are being told, instructed in this way, and I'm not clear exactly to what extent they're being assisted in figuring out how they can deliver coherent testimony while complying with the rules, and to what extent Conyers' staff is assisting which witnesses in that regard. They certainly are getting some minimal advice, which includes the fact that the real catch is if you name some individual by name, so that it's
right.
possible that you could say even top administration officials and have people understand by that Bush and Cheney without saying the president or Richard Cheney, and so there may be ways that they can work around, and I'm hopeful that the witnesses are getting proper guidance on how to comply while actually stating something useful.
Right. Well, it's going to be very difficult for a number of reasons. First of all, I know you've written about the previous title regarding imperial presidency, but the title of the hearing now, Executive Power and Its Constitutional Limitations, the article of impeachment that prompted this hearing is one that lays out a course of deceit, which really has nothing to do. Clearly, everyone, at least in the abstract, would agree that the president is not constitutionally allowed to deceive Congress in a massive way in order to get a war. So the title is really a frivolous, makes it frivolous already. And then what you have are so many people testifying for just a few minutes about what are now six different topics, as I understand it. So it's kind of like the complete works of Shakespeare in 10 minutes. There's no possible way that there could be any useful discussion, I'm afraid to say, at this hearing.
I think the most useful thing will be if the three or four witnesses that can potentially say something important say it, and if the several members of the committee who can be expected to say very useful things or to ask
mm-hmm.
very useful questions take that course. There's not going to be anything in depth. There's not going to be anyone learning new facts, and of course new facts are not needed for a
mm-hmm.
for a conviction here. But I think if it gets into the media in a new way, and if it significantly increases the public demand and the intra-Congress demand by certain members for real impeachment hearings,
mm-hmm.
then we'll be getting somewhere.
Right, because of course Elizabeth Holtzman and even Rocky Anderson, even if he doesn't talk about impeachment in particular, he's been a very strong voice talking about the misconduct of the president. So, and that certainly would be something that the media may actually cover, which would be a big change.
It might be, but that's what John Conyers is hoping for. He's hoping that he can use this to publicize Bush and Cheney's offenses and crimes without anyone noticing that he's refusing to do anything about those offenses and crimes. So he's got this sort of schizophrenic view of what the public cares about. We care about these abuses, but we don't care if there's any penalty for them, is my impression of his thinking. And for those who care about the electoral future of the Democratic Party, which is, of course, all that Conyers appears to care about, I'm not sure about what that could backfire.
Oh, I think it could absolutely backfire, because it's amazing to me the level of interest that people have been able to maintain in all of this for such a long time, even in spite of the fact that it's been so profoundly discouraging for so many years. But the strange thing is, and the good thing is, that there's actually more and more support for holding the president accountable, and so that is some cause for optimism.
I agree. We are rushing through this hour, and we have to take a break of a few minutes. And I've got 6 or 8 questions that have been sent in that I promise to stop asking my own questions and get to as soon as we get back from break. Unless someone wants to phone in with a question, and then you get priority to phone into the People Speak Radio and ask your question directly to Elizabeth De La Vega. Call toll-free 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. If you are outside the U.S. or Canada, 877-489-6350. And to share your question in writing, go to thepeoplespeakradio.net. This is your host, David Swanson. We will be back in just a few minutes with Elizabeth De La Vega.
Got questions? The library has got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Maybe you and me.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
This land is yours.
And we are back at thepeoplespeakradio.net. This is David Swanson with Elizabeth De La Vega, and we have got a ton of questions, which I promise to try to get to, and you can add yours at thepeoplespeakradio.net or call in at 888-228-4494. Mike in California asks, what are the chances of someone like Vincent Bugliosi prosecuting Bush for murder? He wrote a book by that title, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, and of course he's referring to the possibility of a state or local prosecutor prosecuting Bush for the murder of a U.S. Soldier from their jurisdiction who was sent into war on the basis of fraud. What do you think are the chances?
Oh, I think as a practical matter, the chances are very slim of that ever happening. Vincent Bugliosi himself is not a prosecutor anymore. I think that it would take a state or local prosecutor who had an amount of courage I've never seen in any of them. Most state and local prosecutors who are, say, district attorneys, are, or attorney general, are elected, of course, and I think they would have political considerations. It wouldn't be quite the same as what happens in the Department of Justice, but I don't see that happening. I do see, however, though, the possibility of people being able to bring lawsuits, not directly on the issue of murder, certainly, but there's a lawsuit called a Key Tam lawsuit, which has to do with fraud, and there have been many brought in connection with various aspects of the war and the contracting and so forth, and the Department of Justice has been holding them back, but I don't think the Justice Department would do that if we had a Democratic administration. So that kind of lawsuit could actually go forward, and it certainly could lead to facts that would reveal complicity on the part of the president or the vice president.
Well, we should talk about how to promote that and how to get those started as quickly and as frequently as possible.
Right.
Anything that can move forward, we should be giving people a toolkit to make it happen. Let me throw a couple of related and huge questions at you that could probably take up an entire program. Jane in Alberta, Canada says, does democracy have a future in North American politics? And Alice in Louisiana says, I am so depressed about the abuses and violations of our Constitution that this administration under Bush has committed. What can we, the people, do to restore what has been stolen?
Wow. Those are huge questions. I think that, was it Alice and Jane? Are those the two names?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that certainly their feelings of pessimism are shared by millions and millions of people. And in one sense, that's a very good thing, because I think people are really fighting. And the key to me is that we have to get, the polls show that so many people agree with people such as Alice and Jane and you and I and people who listen to this show, but there is such a small percentage of those people who are actually active. And the key to me, in order to get back to anything that resembles a democracy in this country, is to get the rest of those people who are answering these polls to do more than just voice their opinion when they get a call from a pollster. And so I think what I always tell people when I speak to groups is it's a viral thing. We just have to kind of take it one person by one person and hope that those people then will get other people on board and get people to feel comfortable being active. Not everybody wants to be an activist who stands out there with a sign, but there are many other ways to do that. And I know that on your website, you have a lot of ideas about what things people can do, but it's not enough to just vote, and it's certainly not enough just to answer polls. So I'm not entirely pessimistic, but I think we're in for a big fight, and it's a long-term fight. And we have to remember that so we don't get discouraged with so many defeats on a daily basis, because we ended up in this way after a long-term decline, and so it's going to take a while to get back to anything that resembles what we would like to have.
Well, I agree and appreciate the plug for the website, and I would tell people to go to afterdowningstreet.org and call your congressmember and call the media, and on Friday, join us in Washington, D.C., or if you can't, do a little freeway blogging. Make a giant sign that says impeach and put it where as many cars as possible are going to read it. And do that all day if you can. Here's a couple of Obama questions for you. Lindsay from Iowa asks, do you believe if Obama is elected to the presidency that he will work to reverse many of Bush's overreaching executive powers, or do you think he will use the same sort of tactics for his own agenda, given that the Bush administration was never held accountable? And Danielle in Missouri says, I hate to be a pessimist, but the way Obama is gearing up to redirect troops from Iraq to Afghanistan, do you think we may have to impeach him for continuing genocide in that country?
Well, I think both of those questions go to the overall theme, which is that if we don't rein in this president, what will the next president do? And this is the very thing that you and I were talking about on the break. What will happen if we don't do anything to hold this president accountable is that we have a new baseline for what the next president will consider to be acceptable behavior or behavior that he could get away with. And so I really have no doubt that any president, it wouldn't matter really who it was, would be wanting to expand the power. It's just human nature. And I think Barack Obama would be just as likely to do that as anyone else. Having said that, I do think that some of the things that have happened will be reined in. I think that the Department of Justice will be set on a course that right now it's just completely listing, it's floundering, or foundering, I think is the right word. I do think it will be set back on a track. I think some of the civil liberties that have been destroyed would be righted. And as far as the war in Afghanistan, it does sound like Barack Obama is gung-ho, and that's very disturbing. The moral of the story is that we just have to keep fighting, keep up the arguments for peace. The cause for peace is really the cause of our generation, of our lifetimes. It doesn't matter who's in charge, because we have huge defense machine that's really running the country right now.
Or offense machine, as the case might be.
Exactly. It's an offense machine. It's offensive.
Here's a somewhat related question from Lewis in Arkansas. Do you think Democrats are dragging their feet on impeachment because they are culpable for the same crimes Bush is accused of?
I think that that's a component of it. I think, well, we identified before the fact that the Clinton impeachment just, if it's possible, gave impeachment a bad name, and I think people have reacted to it in a way that irrational Democrats have. But the second factor is with regard to the war. Yes, absolutely. There are many members of Congress who've completely failed to do their job. That doesn't take the heat away from Bush and Cheney and the whole administration that perpetrated this massive fraud. But I think that a lot of people in Congress don't want to bring this up. They don't want to embarrass themselves. And I think the third thing has to do with what Obama's legal advisor was talking about. They really don't want to set a precedent where people are going after presidents. Because if Barack Obama's the next president, he doesn't want the people who follow him to go after him. It's a very seamy situation.
I think that's about the size of it, and we're going to have real saints in there once we've given the office all these powers, and it's going to be hard to do. Here's a question. I'm not sure I understand the lead-up in this question, but I understand the punchline. Bill in Nebraska asks, I heard Nancy Pelosi on the History Channel's special about Star Wars, that she dared to comment, Star Wars is about how we the people have the power. Do you think she is a hypocrite?
Okay.
I don't know. I don't understand the Star Wars connection, but whether Nancy Pelosi is a hypocrite is a pretty clear question.
Yeah. Nancy Pelosi has been a complete disappointment. I guess that would be a huge understatement. She came in. She was reelected on the premise that this Democratic majority was going to turn things around, and of course, from the very moment she became the Speaker, she said impeachment was off the table, and she's been doing everything she can to keep people from even mentioning the word, and apparently fairly successfully, even as far as it goes to Friday, the hearing. I don't really like to get into characterizing people as hypocrites or not. The fact of the matter is, She is not representing her constituency, either in the one from San Francisco or the national constituency. So she's just doing a horrible job as the Speaker of the Democratic Representative.
I think that's very, very tactfully put. There's a little oath she took to defend the Constitution. Betsy, we have about 3 minutes left, and I wanted to mention a completely different topic that we haven't gotten to because mm-hmm. you are clearly a woman of many talents, and you have a very interesting article. It's all over the Internet this week about our national water policy with a subheadline, "Oh, wait, we don't have one." And this was published on tomdispatch.com, at truthout.org. We certainly published it at afterdowningstreet.org. Can you tell, give people an idea of what that's about?
Right. Well, I decided at the end of June, on a day when the state of California was burning and actually ash was raining down on my car, in my neighborhood, and of course the Midwest was being inundated with floods, I decided to kind of turn my attention to a different topic, which was the state of our water policy. And I watched a hearing in front of Congress where a number of experts, including a man named Gerald Galloway, who's been a long-term person involved in flood management and water quality, a person named Paul Friedman, who's the vice president of the Water Environment Federation, and a number of other experts testified in front of Congress, and they all said it's not just about the Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Act isn't being enforced, but the fact of the matter is it's outdated, it's inadequate to cover all the issues that we have, and the tragic truth is that we don't have a national water policy. All we have is a series of projects that are done. They're really earmarks. And the end result, according to all of them, actually, is that we are approaching disaster. So I talked about the cause of peace as being a challenge of our lifetime, and we've heard Al Gore talk about the air, but the other one, of course, is water. And it doesn't sound very sexy, but when you think about your daily life and the fact that you can't do almost anything without having water being involved, I'm just hoping that it's an issue that people start to discuss and pay attention to, and get Congress to take a comprehensive approach to, rather than one that just focuses on these random projects in their own
business. I certainly hope so. Sadly, we are out of time, and people are going to have to go read it for themselves at truthout.org and other websites. The topic is obviously related in that every time the EPA is about to do anything to protect the environment, an order comes down from the White House not to. I encourage everyone very strongly to go and get a copy right away and get a copy for all your friends of United States versus George W. Bush et al. By Elizabeth de la Vega. Betsy, thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing all that you've been doing, David.
My pleasure. This has been the People Speak Radio. We are at thepeoplespeakradio.net. You can go there for an audio clip of this broadcast. You can listen to it again and again, and you can give money at the little button that says Make a Donation, and this show will continue to exist. And upcoming shows that might interest you, Tuesday, July 29th, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, David Michie, author of Buddhism for Busy People, and Wednesday, July 30th, 8 to 9 Eastern Time, Ambassador Edward Peck, a former chief of mission in Baghdad, among other places around the world. Tune in at thepeoplespeakradio.net.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island. wood forest, the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you.